It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast and happy Friday. We are learning more today about that whistleblower at the heart of an impeachment probe on Capitol Hill. The unnamed official who filed a complaint against the president is thought to be a CIA officer who worked in the White House. The president likens it to an act of treason.
We're in a war. These people are sick. They're sick.
Mr. Trump wants to know who in the White House told the whistleblower about that now infamous phone call with Ukraine. He thinks it might be a political operative.
Who's the person that gave the whistleblower the information? Because that's close to a spy. You know what we used to do in the old days when we were smart, right? With spies and treason. We used to handle it a little differently than we do now.
While the commander-in-chief calls it treasonous, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calls it something else.
This is a cover-up.
In the U.S. Senate, there are conflicting views about the impact of a whistleblower complaint.
It was a nothing burger for me, the phone call with the president and Ukrainian president.
Donald Trump is going to choke on this supposed nothing burger. He will go down with this supposed nothing burger in his throat.
Republicans are calling into question now the credibility of the complaint. Former CIA station chief Dan Hoffman.
The allegations in the whistleblower's complaints are based on third-hand mainstream media sources rather than first-hand information.
And that is tantamount to hearsay and gossip, says Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn.
The most immediate concern I have is it's not based on first-hand knowledge. In other words, he says he heard this from other people.
But two Republican governors are now on record supporting the impeachment proceedings. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker.
It's a deeply disturbing situation. I think the proper role and responsibility for Congress at this point is to investigate it and get to the bottom of it.
Congress about to go on a two-week break. It's unclear if they'll get a chance to talk to the whistleblower before then. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich thinks all this talk of impeachment might backfire on Democrats and the Democratic presidential frontrunner.
I think this will destroy Biden's candidacy. When you look at Hunter Biden in China, and you look at Hunter Biden in Ukraine, and you look at Joe Biden on tape saying as the sitting vice president of the United States, he directly threatened the Ukrainians with a $1 billion penalty if they didn't drop this prosecutor.
So what are you saying today about this story? New poll from Politico shows 43% of Americans support the impeachment inquiry. 43% are opposed. The Trump administration is slashing in half the number of refugees allowed in this country. Just 18,000 will be let in over the next year. That's down from the current limit of 30,000. Juliet Gillette is at the Migration Policy Institute.
In a time when there are, you know, millions of displaced people around the world and war is raging, I think the U.S. has a responsibility to take some leadership in refugee resettlement.
But ICE Director Matthew Albence says open borders lead to sanctuary cities, and that gives rise to violent gangs.
This needs to stop. It's time to publicly call out those who have put politics over public safety, those who make our communities less secure, who create safe havens in which criminal aliens and gangs are allowed to flourish and can victimize innocent people with impunity.
Former ICE Director Tom Homan got into a shouting match with Democrats on the immigration debate in testimony yesterday before a House panel.
Children are dying. Cartels are getting rich. Why am I angry? Because you haven't done anything to fix it. Nothing.
Time of the gentleman has expired.
I've asked you politely to let me go beyond my time, and you let other people go beyond their time. But nothing.
Mr. Homan.
But you work for me. I'm a taxpayer. You work for me.
Homan says 90% of ICE arrests are convicted criminals and fugitives who've been through the immigration process before. America's vaping-related death toll is now at 13. Two more fatalities from overnight, Mississippi and Oregon. Dean Seidlinger is with the CDC.
I think as the trend continues, I think we are going to see increased number of cases and tragically more death.
The number of lung illnesses tied to vaping has now topped 800. A warning to today for deer hunters. Deer with tuberculosis can transmit the disease to humans. It happened in Michigan recently when a hunter inhaled harmful bacteria while dressing a deer. Hunters are now advised to wear protective gear while field dressing. General Motors has had a change of heart about health care. The company says it will continue to pay for coverage for striking workers. Bill Savage is among them.
I would like to think that it's a good gesture of faith, but we'll see.
49,000 GM workers have been on strike since mid-September. Teachers in Chicago have authorized union heads to call a strike next month if they can't make headway on pay, benefits, and staffing shortages. Union President Jesse Sharkey.
This is a clear signal from the members of the Chicago Teachers Union at 520 public schools across the city that we need the mayor and the Board of Education to address critical needs in our schools.
With 400,000 students, Chicago is the third largest school district in America. Overseas, evidence today that the Syrian government attacked opposition forces with chemical weapons. Secretary of State Pompeo says the Assad regime used chlorine gas on its own people back in May. Saudi Arabia allowing foreign tourists in for the first time.
Ever since Saudi Arabia has been a country, we're talking 89 years, it has not been a kingdom open to tourism. You could not get a tourism visa. Very difficult to get for anybody, even a business visa. Now, for the first time in the 89 years of the kingdom, they're literally throwing open the door.
How about that? Travel expert Peter Greenberg, a California skydiver, is dead after crashing into a big rig on a highway. The 28-year-old woman slammed into the back of a tractor trailer near Sacramento.
She's descending. She hits the rear trailer of a truck-tractor combination. After she hits the truck-tractor trailer, she then hits the roadway.
The woman was parachuting with a group of skydivers. Witnesses reported strong winds at the time. The world's oldest barber has passed away after 96 years of cutting hair. How about that? Anthony Mancinelli from Orange County, New York, started cutting hair in 1923, up until a few weeks before he died of cancer, he was still cutting hair at Fantastic Cuts in New Windsor, New York. Mancinelli was 108 years old. Now, someone who lives for likes, Facebook is making some changes.
For many, the number of likes on Facebook is about validation and self-esteem, but the social media site says it's also a motivation for people to post and repost messages they think will go viral. Now it's experimenting in Australia, making the number of likes and views visible only to an account holder and not to his or her friends. The New York Times says Facebook wants to know if people will still comment or click on like, even if they don't know how many others are doing it.
Correspondent Peter King still to come on the Noon Report for a Friday flu season starting early. Beware the spotted lanternfly and a 13-year-old from the Southern Tier on a walk for water halfway around the world.
This is meteorologist Ken McKinley. Plenty of sunshine as we continue through today and very warm for late September. For the weekend, unsettled on Saturday, very pleasant on Sunday. Full forecast details coming up in about 10 minutes.
All right, we'll see you then. Thank you, Ken. Checking the stories making news where you live. Across New York and Pennsylvania, the grandmother of a young boy found on a porch in Buffalo has been granted custody of that child. Family Life's Bill Price with the latest developments.
3-year-old Noel Alvin was found alone on the porch of a stranger on Potomac Avenue in Buffalo less than 2 weeks ago. Since then, his parents have remained missing, but there's suspicion they're dead as the result of a vehicle fire not far from where the boy was found. Police in Buffalo still investigating. The grandmother lives in Florida, where that little boy is from. Bill Price, Family Life News.
Little Roy Central Schools, Genesee County, New York, canceling classes today because of a credible threat. Police are investigating. The superintendent saying today in a press conference this is far more than a prank, but he's not saying any more than that. That press conference ongoing in Leroy, New York. Health experts predicting an early start to the flu season. People get ready. Influenza usually rears its ugly head in November, but signs are pointing to an October start date this year. Dr. Justin Nitisco, an infectious diseases expert with Arnett Health in Elmira.
Typically, the flu season goes around April. That's usually when the announcement is that the flu season is over. Peak season actually is in March, where there's a lot of flu cases that are described and in the country.
The flu season usually lasts from early fall to late spring and affects some 40 million Americans every year. The Wolf Administration in Pennsylvania has dispersed nearly 7,000 naloxone kits at almost 100 distribution sites the past couple of weeks. The governor hopes it'll help prevent people from dying of drug overdoses.
It has permeated Pennsylvania, every corner of Pennsylvania, every community in Pennsylvania.
The governor says it is time to rethink the opioid epidemic.
We have got to start treating this like the disease that it is. It's not a moral failing. It's a disease, and it starts with recognizing that fact and getting that out into the open.
The past 5 years, more than 25,000 Pennsylvanians have been revived with naloxone by police and first responders. The Niagara University women's swim team in Western New York is suing the school. They claim they were sexually harassed by members of the men's team.
There was a pervasive culture of name-calling. The women were subjected to horrible attacks on them based on their personal appearance.
That is attorney Cheryl Myers-Booth. She says the women swimmers reported the abuse to school higher-ups, but no action was taken. More Pennsylvania politicians are opposed to Governor Wolf's new gun control policies. One bill in particular, the so-called Red Flag Bill, would allow police to confiscate firearms from dangerous individuals.
When you talk red flag, there's no treatment involved. It's just about taking folks' guns out of their hands.
State Representative Rob Kaufman chairs the House Judiciary Committee. Shira Goodman with Ceasefire PA is upset by his decision not to bring the red flag bill up for a vote.
I think it's outrageous. I think it's a dereliction of duty, and we can guarantee you that Chairman Kaufman will be hearing from not only his constituents, but Pennsylvanians all over.
Red flag laws allow family members and cops to seek a court order that temporarily removes guns from people who pose a threat to themselves or others. Pennsylvania's declared war on the dreaded spotted lanternfly. Family Life's Brandon Dixon has that story.
Citizen soldiers are fighting back with fly swatters and vacuums, dish soap and sticky tape. They're stomping and spraying and zapping and bragging about their kills on social media. And still, the invaders come. Hordes of them, relentless and seemingly inexhaustible. The lanternfly's rampage has been slowed but not stopped. The insect, a large, colorful plant hopper native to Southeast Asia, has emerged as a serious pest since the federal government confirmed its arrival in southeastern PA 5 years ago. It sucks the sap from valuable trees and vines. And the Pennsylvania Agriculture Department says the lanternflies threaten $18 billion worth of agriculture, timber, and grapes. The bug has expanded its range into New Jersey, Delaware, and Virginia, alarming officials in those states as well. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
All right, Brandon, thank you for that. In Peyton Post, New York today, a 13-year-old girl is leading a fundraising effort to provide water filters to 100 villages in Nepal. Family Life, Sarah Harnish.
This is Leah Grace Riscala's mom, Laura.
It's encouraging to see kids changing the world.
Leah has organized Walk for Water, which is a walk around the town of Painted Post. All the cash raised will go toward $30 filters that purify the water for an entire town for 10 years. That walk is open to anyone at 1 p.m. today at Riverside Park.
We have kids out there doing really bad things, but we have kids out there doing really great things and changing the world positively and not changing it with terror or fear or guns or violence or drugs or all these things that we hear about that are devastating and terrible, and they are affecting us. Leah Grace is affecting the world positively.
The team from Hope Church leaves October 3rd with suitcases filled with water filters, heading to the group I Thirst International in Nepal. All of it because of the dreams of a teenage girl in Painted Post. Sarah Harnish, Family Life News.
All right, great story. Thank you, Sarah. 13 past the hour. This is the Noon Report. Sports next, the two-minute drill. Filling in for Sonny again, Family Life's Bill Price.
Yeah, Bob, high-stakes drama at Lambeau Field last night. Aaron Rodgers intercepted on a tip pass in the end zone. 20 seconds left. The Philadelphia Eagles held on. 34-27 win over the previously unbeaten Green Bay Packers. Jordan Howard ran for two touchdowns, caught another as Philadelphia rebounded after losing back-to-back games by a combined 7 points. Eagles QB Carson Wentz.
Still huge, you know, especially the point of the season that we're at. You know, going 2-2 is a heck of a lot better than being 1-3. To come in here and fight to the end, the defense coming up big at the end, a huge win for it.
Green Bay's Devontae Adams had a career high 180 yards on 10 catches, but he wasn't on the field for the Packers on the last drive because of an injured toe. The Red Hot Brewers further closed the gap in the NL Central race, a 5-3 win over the Reds. The Brewers have clinched at least a wild card spot. They now trail the first place Cardinals by only one game with three left for both teams. Milwaukee also putting pressure on the Nationals, who hold a one game edge on the Brewers for the NL's top wild card after they beat the Phillies 6-3. Steven Strasburg earned his 18th win, allowing one run, striking out 10 over six innings. American League action, the Indians fell further back in the wild card race following an 8-0 loss to the White Sox. Cleveland lost its second straight to Chicago to fall two games behind idle Tampa Bay for the second wild card spot. Just three games left. Skipper Terry Francona.
We can't let up. I mean, the natural feeling is to feel sorry for yourself. We can't do it. We haven't done it yet. And until somebody tells us we have to go home, we got to keep grinding. We got to find a way.
Minnesota became the first team in Major League Baseball history with 300 homers in a single season. Jonathan Scope connecting for a two-run shot during the seventh inning. The Twins win over the Tigers to hit the historic milestone. From the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bill Price.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Friday, the Capital Connection crew ready to talk issues in the news. From the state capitals in New York and Pennsylvania, Ken McKinley has that weekend forecast. And at the end of the broadcast, a remarkable survival story out of upstate New York. You're not going to believe how this guy survived a car crash.
So we might be headed to impeachment proceedings. What does this even mean? I asked Chuck Colson. Kind of. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Even before he was sworn into office, President Trump's political opponents were talking impeachment. Still, nothing so far, not pressure from the squad, not the Mueller report, has been able to move House Speaker Nancy Pelosi from a carefully, politically calculated decision not to impeach. Well, that may have changed. In response to the revelation that President Trump asked the President of Ukraine to investigate Hunter Biden, Pelosi announced she was launching an impeachment inquiry. Even after the release of partial transcripts of the call that was heralded as a smoking gun by some and a nothing burger by others, it's still not clear whether this inquiry will lead to actual proceedings. Still, we're a step beyond where we've been since the 1990s. Two sitting U.S. presidents, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton, have been impeached. Richard Nixon resigned in order to avoid impeachment. In 1998 and 1999, Chuck Colson brought his up-close, intimate, and personal experience with Watergate to bear, along with his biblical worldview, on the Clinton impeachment proceedings. Three of Chuck Colson's observations from those Breakpoint commentaries are, I think, particularly helpful and clarifying for what we likely face now in the coming months. In one commentary, Chuck noted that many people didn't understand what impeachment is and how it works. I think that's just as true today. So here's his helpful explanation.
If the House of Representatives, you see, passes an impeachment resolution this coming week, it does not mean the president is going to be turned out of office. It simply means that the House has made a finding that there is credible evidence, and it then sends the matter to the Senate. The Senate's job will be to decide how to dispose of the matter. Do nothing, plea bargain, censure, or conduct a trial. In their wisdom, our founding fathers designed a way we could bring to trial the only man in America who cannot be tried in the courts while he sits in office, the President of the United States. They intended no man to be above the law, a concept that reflects a major Christian contribution to the founding of our nation. The House action will not, I repeat, not, despite what the President's defenders claimed this week, overturn the election results.
And in another commentary, Chuck noted a stark, important difference in how the Watergate investigation proceeded and what he was seeing in the Clinton impeachment procedure.
Nearly 25 years ago, I sat in the witness chair facing the House Judiciary Committee during the impeachment hearings of Richard Nixon. Hardly a happy day testifying under oath about all the transgressions of Watergate. I left the hearings that night knowing I was going to prison and despondent because I knew that my friend President Nixon would soon be out of office. But in a sense, I had a renewed confidence in the system. The reason was that the congressman seemed genuinely concerned about upholding the law. Even the Republicans, mostly partisan defenders of Nixon, recognized that the integrity of the presidency was on the line, and what was right had to take priority over politics. I was reassured, even though I was on the losing end, that the American system was stronger than any man or partisan interest.
Chuck went on to note how those days were over, replaced by a culture in which political leaders were unwilling to put national interest above political ideology, and in which citizens had lost their confidence in the American system. I can only imagine what he'd think now. My guess is he'd add a loss of civic knowledge and a lack of public virtue to this analysis. Still, in Chuck's final analysis, after the Senate, wrongly in his view, acquitted President Clinton, he reminded us that all the events of the cultural moment must be understood in light of something bigger, something unchanging, and ultimately sure.
And for all of us who are Christians, regardless of how we view Friday's vote, let us be reminded, we serve a God who rules over the affairs of men, whether they know it or not.
That was true in 1972, in 1998, and it remains true today. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 past the hour, that weekend forecast, yours next. Ken McKinley, thank you very much filling in for Kevin today at the Weather Center. It is Friday, the 27th of September. This is the Noon Report. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are, as always, Michael Gear with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. A lot on our plate this week. Michael, let's begin with you in Harrisburg. Governor Wolf is on record supportive of recreational marijuana, and he wants lawmakers to act immediately. What are your concerns?
Yeah, it's not a surprise that Wolf is coming out. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman had his thumb on the scale throughout this whole so-called listening tour that he did in all 67 counties, pushing for the legalization and really the commercialization of marijuana. And the concerns that come with that, based on states that have done that, are myriad in terms of health effects on children and psychological effects and crime and introducing the cartels and big tobacco and big pharma into the marketplace. And that's not something we want for Pennsylvania. I don't think the legislature is going to act quickly. The GOP leadership in the state Senate said immediately that they are not interested in moving in the direction that the governor is calling for. And we at Pennsylvania Family Institute certainly see the concerns and are looking for the people in the state to raise their voice against it.
Yeah, and is anyone watching? I think we're up to 11 or 12 now, fatalities related to vaping. A lot of these are vaping marijuana, Jason. And I know the governor of New York is calling for a regional approach to marijuana. Do you think this is a backdoor attempt to get full-blown legalization next year?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, we watch what's happened in New Jersey. We watched, now the meeting between Governor Cuomo and the Connecticut governor, and they are proposing a regional approach to how we're going to legalize marijuana. And the governor is talking out of both sides of his mouth. On one side, he says that he still is undecided and he has mixed emotions about it. But on the other side, he said, hey, let's talk about what that tax rate should be among all the states. And obviously, when he is facing the billions of dollar deficit that his budget is facing next year, he's looking to squeeze every dime out of every place that he can. I think you're going to see in his State of the State address a call for legalizing marijuana and a tax rate upon it.
All right. I think that'll be one of the first things they try to do when they get back in session. Michael, the General Assembly still in session. They just got a few more legislative days on the fall calendar. Are they showing any movement on Down syndrome protection or school choice legislation?
Well, we're awaiting action in the Pennsylvania Senate on the issue of the Down syndrome protection act, which has passed the House of Representatives. Then the issue of school choice, that's something that's spearheaded by the House Speaker, Mike Turzai, to create a school choice program specifically for the school district of Harrisburg. It's been a terrible school district for decades. This is sort of a lifeline to parents in that school district to give them opportunity to find a school that fits their children. We're hopeful that we'll see action, but the teachers union always opposes any opportunity for school choice.
And if, when we're talking schools, 1,000 kids in Buffalo, Jason, are not in school because of this new vaccine law, schools face fines of up to $2,000 per pupil if there are any vaccine violators in their classrooms. Kind of sounds like a draconian tactics here by the state of New York. How come?
Yeah, it does. The state says not just saying $2,000 per pupil, but we're looking at per pupil per day, and so that compounds very heavily. You know, when the government wants to change behavior, it changes its enforcement of anybody that goes against that behavior. And so we're seeing that unfold. It's having an impact not only on public schools with students that are not able to go, but we're also seeing this far more so in perhaps the Christian schools across the state to where there are greater percentages of students that are not able to participate in classes. And it does lead me to wonder, where does that stop? You know, if the government can say to a church-based school that your students cannot be there on Monday through Friday, what's to stop them from saying they cannot be there on Sunday morning?
Very interesting. If you're just joining us, this is Capital Connection. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we spotlight the weighty issues in the news with a couple of guys who are on the front lines looking out for you. Michael Geer with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. I want to talk about the issue of suicide for just a bit, Michael. There's been a 30% increase in the suicide rate the past 20 years in Pennsylvania. I know a lot of factors are driving that, but there is legislation that was, I think, introduced even this week that would punish people who enable or encourage suicide. Explain that a little bit and let us know if that's something that you guys support.
Well, there was a famous case that went to trial and resulted in punishment for a girl who was encouraging her boyfriend to commit suicide and through text messages and other things pushing that. And that's an egregious example of that sort of behavior. And I think it's something that should be looked at. Because certainly when people are in that frame of mind, we don't want to be encouraging them in that direction, but rather to seek help. But this increase in suicide that we're seeing in Pennsylvania and across the country is such a serious problem, and there's so many factors that tie into it, the breakdown of the family, use of social media and people treating people badly, and even the loss of moral values in the Christian faith, I think all ties into it.
Yeah.
I don't know that laws ultimately are going to fix it.
And then you get into the drug opioid epidemic and the rest of it. So many factors at work there. Jason, while we're on the topic, I know that this is one of the things that you're concerned that Democrats in Albany next year in 2020 will make a priority, physician-assisted suicide. How much of an appetite is there for that? And are Christians showing a united front when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, well, on those two points, you know, first, I think they are going to make a big push next year. Normally, I would say in an election year, you don't see those kinds of things move, but there is a push, and I think we're going to see it really advance. At least the pressure will increase in 2020. We'll be doing our best to stop it. I just don't see how it can help the overall suicide rate when we're desensitizing the culture to certain kinds of suicide. And essentially with assisted suicide, you're saying these kinds of suicides are okay, but this kind is not. And I just find that as a contrary message and, frankly, a dangerous message to be sending today. So we have, you know, grave concerns regarding that issue. Regarding the unity of the pro-life movement, I think there is some reason for churches and for pastors and for pro-life organizations to be speaking out on end-of-life issues, not just beginning-of-life issues, because people that are moving further away from a biblical worldview of things are making a disconnect between the sanctity of life at the beginning of life and the sanctity of life at the end of life. And all pro-lifers should recognize that life is life from conception until natural death.
Well said. Michael, let's switch gears a little bit. A big weekend for the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Your yearly Friends of the Family Banquet is happening tonight, and Sarah Sanders, a lot of folks know who she is. She will be the keynote speaker there at Hershey Lodge. We're looking forward to being there. Tell us a little bit about why you do this every year. What's the purpose of this?
Well, it's interesting. Just had actually a printer who does a lot of print work for us who comes to the banquet every year, and I was talking to him, asking him if he was coming this year, and he said, I wouldn't miss it because it's so encouraging. You know, we talk about some weighty issues and work on weighty issues, as Jason does there in New York State, but ultimately we serve a living God who is in control and whom we can trust. And then when we do these banquets, certainly they're fundraisers for us, but they are also a way that we can convey to people that if they engage, if they pray, if they work, if they give, God is responsible for the results, and we can take encouragement for that. So we're hoping people leave our 30th anniversary banquet tonight very much encouraged.
All right. We can't wait to be a part of it as well. And then finally, I want to talk about climate change. It's in the news a lot. The UN had its General Assembly this week, and it's kind of interesting. The religious persecution thing, the media didn't cover that at all. But, boy, I tell you, when it comes to this, it was every day. This was the thing. A global warming rhetoric, I hate to use the word heated, Jason, but it's become that, almost to the point of a pseudo-religion. Explain a little bit the energy policies that you're seeing out of Albany, maybe, that our listeners need to be wary of.
Yeah, when it comes to global warming, I just think that, you know, New York needs to take a chill pill. We have this concern because the legislation that passed last June is going to greatly impact our state. By 2050, essentially, we're going to have a zero carbon footprint in our state under the law. Now, I don't know how we realistically can do that, but we are not going to have propane, heat, natural gas, wood-burning stoves. The forms of electric we have now will not exist. Nuclear energy will not be a part of that option. We really are looking at solar, wind, and whatever new technologies New York can come up with in the next 30 years. The cost of that is incredible. And essentially, Albany passed the law saying, get it done, and they have no idea how to do it. So I think it's going to really greatly tax our state and discourage even businesses from coming to set up shop here in the years to come. It's dangerous legislation.
All right, and that will have to be the last word this week. So many issues, so little time. Learn more about the Pennsylvania Family Institute. You've got a great website, Michael. Where can folks go?
PAFamily.org.
And in New York State, Jason, your website, sir?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
All right, guys, great show as always. Thank you very much. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the Noon Report or online anytime, fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Very pleasant weather conditions across the entire region through this afternoon with temperatures above normal for late September and plenty of sunshine. We will be looking at the approach of a cold front overnight tonight and the passage of that front during the day tomorrow. That's going to bring some clouds in and increase the winds from the southwest. That'll keep temperatures tonight fairly warm, and the humidity levels will increase as well. And that'll set the stage for an unsettled day tomorrow with some showers and probably some thunder showers. Some locally strong storms could occur. Once the front moves on through, we'll see clearing tomorrow night and a return to sunshine on Sunday with cooler and less humid conditions, but actually temperatures on Sunday will be fairly close to normal for this time of the year.
Okay, Ken, thank you very much. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. And finally, at noon today, a miracle survival story out of upstate New York. A man got trapped in a sports car that had been crushed under the weight of a 45,000-pound big rig. That sports car flattened like a pancake, but 28-year-old Jelani Ras Craig was virtually unscathed.
It was a flour truck, so there's flour and smoke from the engine bay pouring into the car. So I'm choking, gasping for air.
The first responders used the jaws of life to rescue this guy from that mangled mess of twisted metal.
Survivability rate on this is zero. No way is this guy alive.
Right.
And they said, he's talking. I said, get out of here. Go around the car. And they're yelling, hey, bud. He goes, dude, will you take my picture? He goes, this is unbelievable.
That is some cool dude right there. Jim Strzok is the fire chief in Watervliet, New York.
He walks out of the car, and he's high-fiving us on the way to the hospital. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
They went beyond the line of duty to do their job, and I'm really grateful for it. I appreciate it. Definitely something I'm always going to remember.
Unbelievable indeed. Anybody could survive that wreck. Reyes Craig walking away from that accident, just a few stitches to his hand and a couple of missing teeth. Not a bad day. And that's the world we live in. Friday, September 27th. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.